Avatar is back.
This is Appa, my flying bison.
Right. And this is Katara, my flying sister.
That's right, I'm Sokka. It's pronounced with an Akka.
My name is Toph Beifong, and I'll need 4 tickets.
My name is Zuko, Prince of the Fire Nation, and heir to the throne.
Don't flatter yourself.
You lost me at Zuko.
Zuko, you look so cute.
I can tell you're lying.
Why would I let go of Katara? I love her.
Anybody got a problem with that?
You'll have to leave now. Your lemur is harassing our sparrow keys.
Those are enemy birds.
Even that oaf knows to concentrate on what he's doing.
He does have a heart, doesn't he?
Come on!
Shuffle on, I get you.
Stay flaming. Now, check this out.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender podcast for DongBuFang.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by several co-hosts, first of which is Abby.
Hi.
I'm also joined by Jake.
Hola.
Jody.
Hello.
Martin.
Hello.
Melanie.
Hello.
And Ruth.
Salutations.
And this is Martin's first podcast, so yeah, he is coming to us from the Netherlands, 11 a.m. Okay, so send us questions at podcast@dongbufang.net, send us Avatar questions for the mailbag segment, and you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, and the podcast page is dongbufang.net/podcast. And today's podcast, we will start off with our news reviews on DongBuFang and Avatar news, move on to a post-invasion/pre-312 discussion. So basically what we'll be doing is we'll be reviewing some of the major themes presented within the invasion and talking about going more in-depth than we did in our initial reaction segment last podcast, and also going into the future with them. So like what's going to happen in future episodes. And then we'll have an extremely long mailbag segment, and we'll close things out. So let's get on to our news and views. Okay, now in DongBuFang news, DongBuFang's winter event, the most wonderful time of the year, yes, best name ever, is here, no. And we'll be announcing the 313 through 317 titles all throughout the winter. Currently, we have just posted 4 choices for the 313 title for title elimination. Only one of them is real. They are the Fire Lady, the Firebending Masters, the White Lotus, and the Escape. Check DongBuFang at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time on December 14th to see which one is real. Okay, so that should be it's good yes. There. And in our DongBuFang, in our Avatar news, Day of Black Sun has scored in the ratings. It hit 3.8 million viewers, making it the most watched Avatar showing of all time.
You're excited.
So basically, you know, good. This was like below average. I expected way higher, but at least it made it. I mean, I was panicking when they didn't have it out there at first, so. Well, this is, you know, this isn't going to bring us to season 4, but at least it's going to keep Avatar in its good time slot, so that's good. So yeah, any other, and yeah, 312 for Avatar, they're taking a break. It's going to be back earliest January, latest March, most likely around February, so look forward to that. So let's move on to our main and only discussion this week, post-invasion pre-312. Okay, now that the Just Watch effect of Day of Black Sun has worn off, we can get it deeper into the episode. We also look into the future on a lot of these topics and preview 312. So the first topic we're going to go over for post-invasion is Sokka's role in the invasion. And we kind of went into this last time, but now that the effect has, worn off, I still hate it.
I think it was pointless.
I still don't like Sokka's role, and here's why before Martin starts going crazy. This wasn't the time for Sokka specifically to develop. The invasion would be a time for major characters to develop. And I'm not saying Sokka's not a major character, but as we will look into in 2 weeks, the main theme of the entire show, it's Sokka doesn't fit in that well. And it's not... Sokka's a good supporting character. He's not really one of the characters this storyline's going to determine on, though. So, you know, I just didn't think it was his time. I think it was Aang's time. And
Aang's time will be at the end. I think this is a good time.
Yeah.
There are other
times.
Characters in this show.
Yeah, but it's, oh, really? This wasn't the time.
You're overthinking this. You need... You're overanalyzing it. Come on. You needed a good support character to make a very boring episode any good. So what did they do? They throw in Sokka.
Wow.
Always...
Oh my god.
that's killing DiMartino. But yeah.
Wow.
I don't think it's not a boring episode because I think they cut a lot of stuff out of this. I mean, they could have focused on Aang's side more. But I mean, they did focus on him in 309, I guess. But
no, what I didn't like that they cut out was the part about the Avatar State. How they just said like two things about it.
No, I think that was interesting. Yeah. That was interesting, and that'll come up later.
It just threw
don't
it
talk
in
about
for
the Avatar State yet. And we'll get into that in 2 weeks. That's like the main theme of the show. So yeah, was it necessary? I mean, whether it's good or bad, that's an opinion. Was it necessary? No, it wasn't. I mean, Sokka had his development episode in 304. What I think Sokka is going to be right in the graveyard with Toph.
So Sokka gets
the season.
One episode a season.
Yes, I know.
Dude,
seriously, shut up, Valdi. Pretty sure that was you. Yes. Okay. So yeah, seriously, Toph and Sokka. That's why Toph is going to happen because they're both in the graveyard. I'm not saying they're going to die, but we'll get into this. But
best canon evidence ever.
Seriously, it's like they're both dead characters,
die.
Therefore they're gonna get together. So,
what is wrong with you?
I refuse to believe that Sokka is going.
Ruth is like cracking up now. Wow. So, what's your take on this, Martin?
Well,
is it necessary?
Let's see. Well, for starters, I refuse to believe Sokka is going to be a dead character. That guy has been in here for the beginning, since the beginning. He's been here since the first couple of minutes. I don't think they're going to kill him off that easily.
Well, wait. Well, what has he been the last 9 episodes? Aside from episode 4, has he been dead?
Yes.
Yes.
But so is Katara yeah. for no, most episodes. So
no,
that's
Katara,
not really...
Katara had her episode 2, but Katara is intertwined in another thing that's dependent, so... Katara's been more involved than Sokka has, definitely.
So, how was she? Is she more involved? Explain it to me, please.
Like more lines, you know, the same criteria you did for saying Toph is dead. Like,
I don't think Katara has had more relevant lines than Sokka in the past season. Actually, maybe you think she did because it was all Katang, but
no, no, the Katang was all movement. So, but Sokka, I think he's been relatively a dead character the past 9 episodes. But,
yeah, but
going into this, like, what's the future for Sokka? I just don't see him having a major role anymore. It's not about Sokka right now. It's about...
But he's going to have to do something at the end, right? At the final couple of episodes.
Well, I mean...
He's got to have some role.
Well,
yeah.
Sokka could... This is... I
just cut him out.
How am I not... I'm comparing Sokka's line to Toph. I mean, Sokka's gonna have a role, but Sokka obviously could be intertwined with Suki and stuff, but... So yeah, basically, one of the major things in the future for Sokka could be, like, as me and Martin have discussed this pretty in-depth, Sokka dying could be the most dramatic death possible at the end. Like, who could you... I mean, Aang, Katara aren't gonna die, so... Seriously, if Sokka died, that would be... It would definitely fill you with a sense of loss towards the finale. The four main characters, like, not dying, but...
Toph's gonna die because she was in the swamp.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, <cool. laughs>
That is so stupid.
So, yeah.
The swamp.
I guess we'll get more into this with Toph, but basically, Sokka's role in the end could be dying, and that would be enough. That would be, like, huge. So, maybe. That'd be traumatizing for everyone. Probably.
Yes.
I don't see why you need all that extra drama. They're gonna have drama in different ways.
Yeah,
well, basically,
really
who are they gonna kill off
Sokka
other than Sokka? Who?
Why do they need to kill somebody off, Dylan?
Because or else it's like, oh, that was easy. They just went in there and took out the Fire Lord. They didn't, I mean, people died, obviously, in Day of Black
Zuko
Sun, but nobody made her die. Yeah.
If Zuko possibly dies, then why does Sokka also die?
No, Zuko's safe.
Zuko's probably not going to die. I'm going to say that now. But Zuko dying, I think Sokka dying would be more dramatic than Zuko dying, is what I'm saying. Yeah.
I just don't really see Sokka dying at the end.
We're speechless.
So yeah, Aang's roll in 310. Was it a realistic reaction to the invasion? Basically, he accepted it, and he was perfectly, like, going along with the plan and everything, and he was totally there. Is that realistic?
I think his lines were actually pretty bad. Fire Lord Ozai, where are you?
That was perfect. That was an amazing line.
That was a good line. I thought it was a good line. Zach Tyler Isaacs kind of messed up with the voice acting.
I think that was perfect.
I just didn't like the way it sounded. I liked the line, I just didn't like the way it sounded.
And Zach Eisen did a great job.
Yeah, exactly.
I had no complaints about the voice acting. There's the whole thing. But
Serena Williams.
Serena, that wasn't a complaint.
Did you say something? Oh my goodness. Never mind.
Well, to be honest, it felt like Zombie Aang was back from the Serpent's Pass. He barely showed any emotion again. Zombie Aang's back.
Well, I think it wasn't really Zombie Aang. It's more of it was like determined Aang. Aang now has motivation after kissing Katara and, like, leaving with a group hug. I mean, he knows what he's fighting for. I think this was realistic, because this is how Aang has reacted in pressure situations, and it's like, it's reacted really well, as we've seen in Crossroads of Destiny and Siege of the North, is that he gets into this mode that it's like a special avatar feature, that he can just, like, tune out all the bad things that are happening, like, focus in on his goal and his mission, and it's one of the things I love about Aang, his character, is that he always is able to... In, like, 309, he was freaking out, and that's why it was good, because it showed the other side to that. But when it gets down to it, he can always focus down. Like, go... Yeah, do what he's trying to need to do. So what are his feelings after the invasion? That's interesting.
Oh, he was crying.
I lost.
You know, Aang didn't seem as devastated as I thought he would be.
He was crying.
Why? What were you expecting? What's more devastated than crying?
I'll make this up to all of you. That's... I think Aang expected it. I just don't...
He expected to lose?
He had to have had the option
what?
There.
I don't think he expected to lose,
because if he expected to lose, he wouldn't have had the attitude he had in 310.
Well, duh.
With
but...
cheering and everything, if he expected he was going to lose.
It was the final battle, but I mean, he knew that it was a possibility that they could lose.
Everyone knew it was a possibility.
I don't think Sokka
was doubting that they were going to win, but he wasn't considering what might happen after they lost. It's like, I think Aang was thinking ahead. That's why he was like, I know where we can go at the end of the Western Air Temple. He
that
didn't
will
come
be
up with
so
that on
out
the
of
spot.
Picture.
Really don't
for
think
Aang
was
to think ahead.
Aang does think ahead. Yeah. He's really smart.
When did he think ahead? When did he think ahead in the past?
Aang's always thought ahead. Like,
oh, really? When?
Not really.
He pretty much lives for the moment. Sokka's
well,
the one that
there,
always
yeah.
that.
Well, Sokka plans, but Aang... It's like... Aang knows what he's doing, basically.
You give Aang way much to credit. Way too much credit. Whatever, I'm Dutch. And it's early.
No excuse. So basically his feelings after, of course he was devastated that he lost. He was moving on quickly, and that was the important part, I think. Okay, and how to prepare. I don't even know what I meant by that. What did I mean by how to prepare?
By showing a...
Stop making your outline so vague.
You'll make it complete sentences, not fragments.
How to aim,
yeah.
How to prepare...
Where do you... Oh, wait, there's how to prepare.
Because I don't understand what I was saying.
Maybe prepare for next invasion? I don't know.
I don't think there's going to be a next invasion.
Prepare for firebending, prepare for pushing Haru off Appa.
I wish. Okay, that's not... Okay,
just skip that.
Yeah, okay, let's move on to Katara. And this is, of course, the other side of the 310 I hated. She was sidelined. I mean, coming from... a writer's point of view. Why would this happen? And I don't want to hear any of your catting tension theories, Melanie, because that's...
No. There are many reasons for this to happen, actually.
Okay,
many
let's go this, Martin.
Well, first of all, what would have happened to Toph if Katara had been with Aang all the time? That's the first reason.
No Tang? She
would have even less lines if Katara was alive. She would do even less, and that would have been awful.
That's interesting. Okay, what else?
Secondly, somebody needed to be above the ground to witness the eclipse. We needed a main character to witness above events. We needed someone to relate to. And Hakoda...
Well, you could argue that Hakoda is the main character. I mean,
well, wouldn't have been, he's a secondary character. That wouldn't have felt the same if you had been going
Sokka,
back to him. No, shh. It wouldn't have felt the same. Going back, looking at the eclipse through the view of a secondary character. That's why you needed a main character to stay there and see the eclipse.
But the thing was, the above ground, it wasn't even focused on Katara. It was focused on the battle. Katara was just, like, walking in
randomly. Yeah, but you're there with a main character during the battle.
I just didn't think it needed to be Katara. I think Sokka would have definitely been better for... I mean, why not leave the guy who can't fight upstairs?
No. Sokka needed to
can't
be there
fight?
With... We all know why.
Oh my god.
With Sokka going with them is probably part of their Sokka development from earlier in the
episode.
Did
you just say Taka going with them?
I said, what, me?
Yes.
I don't know. It's like Sokka.
Yeah, okay, so.
Sokka needed to be there for the bait, for Azula's bait.
Yeah, that's true. But what was first? What was their first decision? Azula baiting. The gang with Suki or Katara staying up ground?
Probably Azula baiting, and Sokka would have been the easier person to make.
Well, looking at this from a writer's point of view, Mike decided not to have Katara come, but Aaron decided to have the bait. So, well, I mean, of course Aaron's influencing Mike's writing a lot.
I think what happened was they knew that they were going to lose, and they needed Azula to be able to stall them, and Sokka, between those two characters, is the one most likely that Azula will be able to bait that way because of Suki.
I don't think this was written as a connection episode. I think Mike wrote his episode, then Aaron wrote his episode. I mean, they connected a little in the middle. Like, Jake,
that's
what do you think? I don't know.
The
I just
second
think...
episode was so much better than the first
episode.
Because
he had a better writer on it,
Because you had a better writer.
Yeah,
it was.
But, yeah, I just don't think they're connected. So, what was his motivation for leaving Katara off ground, really? I don't think I got a good answer yet.
Yes, you did.
You've got, like, 20 good answers.
I negated Mel's answers, and then the whole point of view from the upstairs thing, it's not enough to leave Katara specifically
up ground.
That's a matter of opinion. That's to get a character up ground. Because Mike didn't know that Sokka would be baited, so what was...
Okay, argument number 3.
How do you know he didn't know that?
Because I just said they're written separately. They were communicating.
You think the writers don't talk to each other?
Well,
yeah,
I don't
no,
think
the writers
that
have to each other.
I don't think Mike planned something 10 minutes into the... Or 15 minutes into the 3:10 that Aaron decided to do 20 minutes into 3:11.
Why not? It would make sense, because it's
basically
the same episode.
Well, it's not, and that's why that's stupid that they're both the same chapter. It's different episodes completely.
They
follow the same exact
story.
One after the other. It's not the same episode. And
well, there are many differences between the episode. Look at the animation, the backgrounds, the writing. It's totally different. Animation, especially.
Well, actually, 3:10 was animated by JM, who is usually called the better company, and 3:11 was by Moy. So, interesting there.
I've always thought Moy was better in season 3. They did the headband, and the headband was awesome.
No, JM did the headband.
I think JM did.
Really?
Yes, JM did headband.
Oh, screw me.
Okay, let's skip that one then. Would it have made a difference if Katara was underground? Like, stepping away from the writer's point of view, going back to the show point of view. Would that have made a difference? Could she have, like,
definitely
killed
Azula?
That
probably would have made a huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah, you mean she could just... Of course, she could have, like, taken her sweat. She could have taken out of the air. She could have taken water.
Blood
well, it wasn't a full moon, but...
But water banning is perfect for
stalling/trapping
someone.
The moon was eclipsing the sun there, so... that might mean something.
She might have been able to bloodbend people.
Well, waterbending is for controlling, right? That would have been perfect to slow down slash stop Azula.
That would have.
She could have. She
could have retained Azula while Aang.
Yeah. Well, I still think they're saving this for a more important time, but.
Obviously.
But yeah, she would. They might have even won if Katara was down. That's why I hate this so much. But feelings after the invasion for Katara.
She didn't show much, right?
Yeah, no, I don't think she seemed that devastated either. That was weird.
She was smiling.
Well, she was comforting. She's comforting Aang. But so yeah, Katara's job was to stay positive towards the end, so Aang wasn't completely depressed. So I don't know. I think she did that well. Aang and Katara both are good at accepting if something goes wrong. It seems like they both switched very quickly. So now I think that was more of their characters than a fault in the writing or something.
Now, compare it to Katara's reaction in the Crossroads of Destiny. She was actually crying for a change.
Well, that's because Aang was hurt. Aang wasn't hurt in this.
If he was hurt mentally, that's worse.
But the thing was, Aang didn't show it. I mean, of course he's crying. Would you expect Aang not to cry? He didn't really, freak out, though. I mean, he stayed strong and they went to the Western Air Temple.
He needed her to comfort her, though.
Yeah, so
I could have shown a little more interest. Hush, Aang, it's all right.
Yeah, I think both of them were really good. Like, their after reactions. They were just right, and it showed that they... See, you can't look at, Aang's reaction without looking at Katara's, and you can't look at Katara's without looking at Aang's here. They both, are depending on each other for this ending.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's, go over Cat Aang pretty quickly, because, we're going to, rush over some of the ships here because we're going to have a shipping special 2 in 2 weeks. So look forward to that. What I want to talk about the kiss. We're going to get more in-depth in the kiss in the mailbag segment because someone's complaining about
that. Oh, my God.
But Jake's like, already I'm not reading that email. Jake says, I'm not reading that email, but I am. So, the kiss.
We already overanalyzed it.
We overanalyzed
it. Nothing more to analyze.
No, Dylan overanalyzed that with that picture.
Picture. basically, I don't know. What did I want to say?
No, you overanalyzed something else, though.
What did I want to say for the kiss?
So
I should make that
one. Guitar was upset.
No.
Yeah, Dylan, just recap it for us again.
I don't want to recap the kiss again.
Recap screen by screen.
I'm so good at that, though.
There's nothing interesting to say about the kiss you did.
I'm going to make this point again. I'm going to make this point in the mailbag heavily, and I'm make this now. The kiss was not a pivotal point in their relationship. It just wasn't. And that's why it may have not seemed so special. It was just... It was a tool for the invasion, Marv. It was like a time-based thing instead of a relationship-based progression. So, don't expect it to be that, deep, I guess. I mean, I analyzed it deep, but you can analyze kisses way deeper than that, so. And we will, of course, but for future kisses. But, yeah, it's... We'll get more into the kiss. I don't want to talk about that yet. So, the future of their romance, so we're just going to talk about this the whole time next in the shipping special, but... confession, romantic scenes, cat angst.
Depending on each other.
No, this is going in order. Acceptance. Final kiss. Yeah, that's it. Okay, so basically, that's a little preview there. Listen to that a couple times and. Hopefully I said it right, and you should be able to pick up on what I'm saying. It's role in the storyline. Major role in the final episodes. It's Cat Aang is a growing development, tool, basically. It's a part of the series.
Katara's always been there with Aang, and so of course it's going to be a part of the
theme. Storyline. So basically the final episodes rely... heavily on getting, more so than Sokka or Toph, which is pretty sad. or their romance, but, okay,
if it makes Dylan happy, it's all good.
No, I'm talking from what's gonna happen. So, thumbs down on 310.
From a writer's point of view.
From a writer's point of view, from a lot of things. Martin, what did you think of 310?
I think it was disappointing in many ways. For starters, I think the design of the Fire Nation defense didn't make any sense. They had dig a trench or something. It was one pathway leading to the capital city, and a few battlements on top, which were not really defended. There were only like 20 soldiers. It was not realistic, especially if you compare it to the Siege of North, which was way more realistic. There were like infinite more Fire Nation soldiers there. Where was the Fire Nation here?
Well, probably, I mean, the way to counter is that probably Fire Nation Navy is, like, 10 times bigger than their army, because what's their army going to do other than defend the actual home base? But yeah, their defense system was completely bogus. I mean, there was, like, once you got up to the thing, there was, like, elevated platforms to the left and right, and there's just this one little ground heading towards the tower. I mean, it made for a good progression in the storyline and good fighting and stuff, but, like, who's going to have that? It's, like, it's specifically made for people invading.
Yeah, it's like, come in, destroy these battlements. We are not defending them. Please, invade our capital.
I mean, I hate people who say they weren't defending themselves properly, but their overall, like, defense system was bad. I mean, they were trying their hardest for what they had, which was terrible. So, it was pretty bad. Well, let's try. Hey, what about those tanks in 310, Martin?
They were so ugly. Oh, Avatar, my God. I think they said this in the pilot. Avatar should not use computer-generated graphics because it looks horrible. If you look at the tanks closely, you will see that it doesn't interact with the rest of the background or other characters. It it's there and it's ugly.
Yeah, stay away from CG graphics.
They used CG for the submarines, and it wasn't that bad.
Well, the submarine CG was a little better, but I mean, the tanks were just completely weird. I was just cracking up the whole time the tanks were on.
Like the one that got stuck on the building. That was funny.
The one that got it was over and anyway. Yeah. I was like, "What the heck is this?"
It's like a caterpillar thing going on with when it crushed the other tank.
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense.
Okay, here's the most exciting topic of the day. Toph.
Yay!
My girl.
Not just Taco.
Clint's girl.
Okay, so, here's a very interesting topic. What did Aaron Ihaz mean with "what would we do without you"? What Sokka was saying when they're in the cavern. So there are two options this pretty... Well, there are three options. It was just, what could be Taka, which is like, the realistic point of view, but not the realistic, the
shipping.
The shipping, the overall, the general fandom point of view. There are also two other possibilities, as Aaron Ihaz was poking fun at Toph's character being dead. It's like, oh, what would we do without you? Because she's no other role in the story anymore. Or it could be poking fun at Toph's fading crush on. Sokka, pretty much, because it started out strong in middle season 2, and it's pretty much faded into oblivion, and we wouldn't notice it if we didn't have Ruth and Jody here, basically. So it could be what's most likely.
It hasn't faded,
it hasn't had an opportunity, and we'll talk about that. But basically, it could be making fun of Toph or Taka, and I think...
Making fun of Taka.
Me and Martin can agree that Aaron was making fun of Toph here. He was
actually that whole scene, first few minutes of the episode were just so random. They just threw Toph into knock out a few doors and make some jokes. That was all.
Aaron was bringing in Toph's character specifically to give her a role, so she wasn't completely not there the whole time. And Aaron was making fun of her, pretty much. It was pretty hilarious, actually. And good.
Glad we added you to
And he was using Sokka to make fun of her, so he was essentially making fun of Taka.
I don't think he was making... He was poking fun at Taka, because Taka's not dead. I mean, it's not gonna be a pivotal point in the storyline, but it's gonna be there. So
it's taking a back seat.
I don't know if it's taking a back seat. It's gonna be a controversial point, because, you know...
it's probably gonna take a back seat in the next couple episodes.
It's
gonna
be George... It's gonna be George versus Taka, though. That's like... It's gonna be a little game there. George is like...
Do not say George!
George is Suka, by the way.
Just call it Suka.
I don't know. I'm gonna say George. I find George hilarious. No. And well, okay.
Well, Tucker, oh my God, I hate that. Has always taken a back seat, right? It never was before.
But now, I mean, like, in the past 9 episodes, it's been the front seat. It's like the front seat. It's been the I don't even know what do you.
No, not really.
It's been the car. No,
we didn't see. We didn't see the stream of Toph kissing Sokka, now did we?
Well, I mean, there's no. Well, no, it's you can't compare Taka to Kedang. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
In the passenger seat.
Yeah, it's because there's been no other Taka romance in the past 9 episodes. That's the point. It's that it's there because there's nothing else there.
They had their moment.
So it's a filler ship?
It's not a filler ship. It's I don't know.
I just made a new term. I'm like copyright.
I like that.
Filler ship.
I don't know. I'm not sure what's going to happen with Sokka in the end and his romance.
They're probably just going to throw in a few more Taka jokes for comic relief, but I don't think it's going to get anywhere in the end.
I think Toph and Sokka will have their most development of the entire series in the next 2 episodes. I just think that's going to happen. And I have no spoiler support for that. It fits with the Kedang part of it. Aang and Katara are going to be off doing their things, and there's going to be some other people there doing some other stuff with Aang.
If you're expecting a Taka kiss, you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, it's not like a kiss.
For some reason, that creeps me out. I'm sorry.
Because Toph and Sokka are not going to have anything to do in the Western Air Temple.
They can bash on Zuko.
Hold on. They can just. Yes, that's how they'll spend their day.
Blowing up stuff together. Chucking rocks and weed at each other.
Basically, so yeah, Toph and Sokka are not gonna have anything to do with, along with the Haru. edit Haru with goatee. Haru with goatee, T.O. and who else?
Go.
And the Duke.
The Duke.
Basically, those five are gonna have absolutely nothing to do.
Unless Haru doesn't make it to the Western Air Temple and falls off.
Trying to push him off.
I think that's wrong. Because why would they add three more characters if they were giving them nothing to do? I don't think there's going to be nothing to do for them.
Well,
I think they're going to have a point.
What the heck are they going to do? I mean, what's their role in the storyline?
They could make an additional perspective. They could add an additional perspective for an extra gang, so to speak.
Yeah, they don't need more perspective. They're going to be packed with. These next couple, there's gonna be like 10 people at the Western Air Temple.
Yeah.
Plus, that's even without it being a White Lotus base or Ursa being there. There's already gonna be.
Hey, you're accepting my theory about Ursa being there, okay?
No, I'm not accepting.
Well, you're acknowledging it.
It's a major theory now. Basically,
so, yeah. I'm not the only one who thinks that.
So yeah, it's gonna be weird. Like, so I think there could be Taka. I mean, here's what I think. I think Toph is gonna flirt with Sokka more, and I think. Sokka is going to flirt back. So basically,
I don't think it's
going
flirt
to be scary.
That would be so. That would be horrible.
Like Sokka's gonna flirt back pacifist way with Toph. It's like his little gentle way.
Sokka doesn't.
Yeah, I don't
see. That doesn't sound like something Sokka would do. I think he's just gonna be oblivious the whole time.
Yeah, and Sokka just.
Okay, guys, we're getting too much into this. We're gonna handle this in 2 weeks. Yeah, basically.
Like, half an hour?
Yeah, we're recording it. No, we're allowed to say that. Let's go back to Toph. No, we're done with Toph now. So let's go to... So basically, is Toph dead in the storyline? Yes. Unfortunately,
yes.
Toph is dead. And that's why her dying wouldn't do anything. Like, dead as in has no point to being there.
But they do have minor roles. It's not dead, it's minor roles.
Well, I mean, Toph's
roles.
Like below a minor role now. Toph is...
Just comic relief.
Yeah, it's like she's only comic relief and Taka relief. That's the only thing. And she's not like training Aang anymore. That's why her stupid 307 storyline was such a bad attempt. So... I agree. Toph has served her purpose. That's the whole stupid thing. She's not a reason to be there. That's why I'm growing more to the fact that she may die. But Toph dying wouldn't do anything. That's the whole point, because she's dead already. So, yeah. Okay, Azula. she devious in Day of Black Sun?
Oh,
yes. She's always
devious.
Yes.
Sweet.
Without about it.
Okay, well, I think she was devious, like, as
Azula
in...
Azula was being Azula.
I think she was Azula into the fact that we hadn't seen her as Azula the rest since 301. I mean, like, Aaron is amazing at making Azula. That's one of the things he specializes in. So, It wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. I wanted her to be better than that. I mean, she,
what?
She I just had two. She had two agents come down, and then she had some baiting with words. I wanted
well,
her
think
to be.
About it. She was playing it smart, Dylan.
I mean,
there
I,
was,
mean
yeah.
I know it was playing it smart.
Three
and that
of
was
them
the
there.
Best
two
thing.
Of them
yeah.
are.
That was the best role for her to like take. I just could have used some more physical tricks, not as many like.
I,
she was flipping
tricks.
All over the place.
Yeah,
I cannot imagine a better way for Zula.
That was
per-
that was totally perfect,
I guess. Like
as
her pre-planned
exactly
was
static, like Ty Lee.
I mean, I mean, of course, she had all these things like lined up to say, but I just wanted more of them to go into effect. It seemed like she only had to go to her second backup plan or something. It's because Sokka's stupid, but. It's, I don't know, I wanted to see what she really had in store in case they figured it out early and they started going away. After Suki, I wanted to see what they had, she had ready. So yeah, what will Azula do from here on out? I have no idea.
It's very interesting point.
I'm wondering what's going to happen
to
Ozai and Azula now that he knows that she was lying to him.
I don't know, I think...
Oh, yeah, that'll be interesting.
I think it might just stay stable. I mean, Ozai doesn't really
oh, sure.
choice,
he, like,
does he?
What is burns the crap out of Zuko when he gets mad at him, but when Azula does something, it's like, here, have a cookie.
But, yeah, like, what's Ozai gonna do? He knows how dangerous Azula is. His best option is just to sit back.
Yeah, but
right
he...
Now.
You can see that he can bend lightning, too.
Yeah.
As well. So
Ozai
he has basically the same power
Ozai's obviously
is
more of a
power
bender than Azula, but Ozai doesn't have the smarts like Azula does.
Well, that's true.
No,
Ozai
no,
got
no,
his
no.
plan... to be Fire Lord, handed to him on a silver platter. He didn't come up with anything. I mean, he's just been... It seems like he's been walked through life for now. And he's had Azula take over. He had Zhao do the Northern Water Tribe invasion.
Zhao, correctly. Who is Zhao?
No, I refuse to say his name right until he comes back. But,
Zhao
do the whole thing with the Northern Water Tribe. He had Azula handle Ba Sing Se. He had the governor handle Omashu. I mean, what's he done?
Well, that makes sense, because he also had Azula handle Zuko at the beginning of Season 2.
Yeah, it's...
Which didn't
he's
work
supposed
out
to leave the fire capital?
He hasn't done anything.
That's true, also, he's not king of the Fire Lord, he's not supposed to leave either.
Well,
so send someone he trusts.
He's absent from the capital.
Well, he's obviously
not supposed
left
to leave
he's left the capital
Earth
before. Because they went
there's
to the beach house, but...
There's a different reason for
yeah,
him not to have done
that's
anything.
That's not just leaving the capital, leaving the Fire Nation in general. Why not send
yeah.
someone he
well,
trusts
yeah, but
to
I
do
mean,
all these things?
He isn't,
right.
What I'm saying is, we haven't seen him do anything to get to do any... Like, we haven't seen him do anything to do anything.
Yeah, well, that's... Obviously, they want to hide his power until so that they can surprise us. They surprise us in the Day of Black
yeah,
Sun by lightning
yeah,
bending.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
I mean, it wasn't just lightning bending. That was better than Azula by a lot. That was...
They were just holding him back so they could surprise us right now. Who knows what his role might be from now on. He might be a lot more active.
I think Azula and Ozai's story is going to take a backstage now, and I think it's going to be... Aang, and we'll see, like...
They'll be back.
I think maybe one episode we could see what they're doing to prepare, but Azula said herself, she can just wait from now on. I mean, the only thing she could maybe do is make a move on the Fire Lord position, but I don't see her doing it anymore. I see Ozai staying there, I see them both staying in their position, Zuko's gone, so what else can happen?
Well, we need someone to hunt down the gang and attack the gang.
Well, why?
Or else... Because we need some action, we need fights, we need bending, we need real bending battles.
See, that I don't see anyone hunting them down.
See, what about the Combustion Man? He's still
Combustion
around
Man's
somewhere.
Gone. He's
Combustion
gone.
Man won't.
The Combustion Man had his finale in 307. That was the point of the episode. But
well, then I need to introduce a new villain.
Well, there is going to be a new villain, as we know. What they haven't done yet. There's two things from the Aaron interview in the new magazine that I haven't seen yet. It's a villain with a strange connection to Katara and Sokka's past, and a boiling lake. So we'll probably see both those things very soon.
Could the connection to Sokka and Katara's past be... what was her name?
That wasn't Hama, by the way.
Wasn't that Hama?
It was Hama was the Water Tribe villain they were talking about. There's another villain
yeah.
Has a connection to their past.
They could have made a spelling error. They could have wanted to say... A Water Tribe villain with a disturbing connection to Sokka and then Katara's past, right?
No, I analyzed that. Aaron was making it seem like there are three villains. New villains. definitely.
Where's that magazine?
I don't know.
I have the magazine somewhere here, so if you want me to...
Wait, hold on, wait, let me go
get
that.
Get it, get it. Right next to... Somebody get it.
Okay, let's not drop the computer this time. Okay, hold on, it's plugged in. Crap, okay, I have to put the computer down.
I have it right here, actually, let me turn to the page. Uh-oh, viewers can also look forward to a villain from the Water Tribe... And another from the distant past with the disturbing connection to Sokka and Katara. So he specifically says another in there.
So yeah, okay, you're right. You're true.
Yeah, so I forgot that he said it.
Okay.
But yeah, there's going to be another one. So we're seeing one more new villain and one more new location. So that's going to be interesting.
I did all that work for nothing.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll see them both in the same place.
You don't bring up with me.
So yeah, Where even were we? Okay, Zuko time. Not like that. Thoughts on move in... What?
I have a cookie.
Thoughts on move in... Yeah, Black Sun. What am I even...
Oh my god, dude!
Oh, yeah, thoughts...
You're terrible.
Oh, thoughts on his move. Well, it was the right time. It's still interesting to see how two different people took advantage of the eclipse, but, you know, I didn't expect him to do this. This was very... I mean, if you could...
This, for me, I thought it was... It just didn't seem to fit, because we really didn't see much of his storyline. The episodes leading up to it, or what we did, was not very much. And then suddenly he has this major change of heart during the episode.
Well, no.
Well, that's
the point
really
was that 309 was supposed to be a lead into it.
I know that
Zuko,
but
they're still accepting him, and he's still realizing that he's not fitting in. And Zuko knew what he was going to do ever since he talked to Uncle in 306. It's been like that. And that whole speech Uncle gave was probably the most pivotal point in the series, actually. So, it is your legacy.
It just probably should have... I think they should have stepped more with that in 309.
They could have done more on that, you're right.
Instead
I don't think
Ang
it was necessary, though. I mean, Zuko was
yeah.
seeing... The point of 309 was to see what Zuko had now, and then at the end, but I wasn't me. To see that he's just gonna let it all go. That was like a...
309 should have been more Zuko-centric, I think.
Yeah, instead of...
I think it was just right. It was just showed his May, his royalty, and his father's side. It accomplished all of those in that short time, and I think it was perfect there. So basically, it was a good lead into this. He surprised me by making this move so suddenly, and actually confronting Ozai. That I never expected. And...
It looked like... Almost, like... I didn't like the fact that he had this, like, all planned out in such a short amount of time.
Well, I don't think
he
had
a amount of time.
Planned out.
Well, of course... I mean, he had this planned out, obviously, but... I think he planned it ever since... The minute after he spoke to Iroh in 306, and that's what... 2 months at least.
Yeah, well, I don't think he planned it out
like
for that. I think that was planting the seeds, and then he started thinking about it getting up to 309, and 309
Zuko's
was like
smart
a
enough to have
point.
A plan. Zuko, I mean, I hate Zuko, but, I mean, he's smart.
I'm not saying he doesn't have a plan, I'm just
Stop
saying I don't think it was as far back
on
Zuzu. As...
Zuzu.
As I was saying...
Okay,
as I was saying...
No, we don't need to get in this. The role in the story in the future.
Oh my god.
I hate to say it, but Zuko's gonna catch up with the gang in 312.
Yay!
Yeah, and he's gonna teach
you were so hesitant last week.
Yeah.
Oh my god, so last week, Zutara.
Dylan changed his mind again.
Zutara is gonna happen.
No. And...
No, Zutara's not gonna happen, but Zuko is still made of incredible awesome.
Yeah, I kinda have to say, Zuko's been pretty cool this last couple episodes. But, I really like Zuko's storyline from 306 on. And... And 305 on, actually. I loved him in 305. And, party's over. So, what was I saying? He's going to be on the gang side from here on out. It'll be interesting to see if he sacrifices himself at the end, what he does at the end, if he's Fire Lord at the end, but we've already discussed that to death. And there's no later movements on this. So yeah, we've pretty much... Okay, next topic, we've already done Tsukisaka.
Fire Lord Zuko.
Top Saka, I hate that. Yeah, episode 21 is not named Fire Lord Zuko, by the way. And...
Yeah. That's NF right now.
It would be fascinating. I've seen that everywhere.
Yeah. Okay, so when does Tsuki come back? Does Tsuki come back?
Eventually, but not soon.
You know, my mind has a tendency to keep her killed off. You know, I just don't like Suki in the storyline.
They might be doing what they did with Jet, like, not really saying it. Like, Azula there was kind of hinting that she's dead, and they're not going to go back for that kind of, like, Jet in Lake Laogai, where they just kind of left it there and didn't go back.
Well, I mean, Suki said, Azula said she was her favorite prisoner. So, and it's
she was speaking passive voice.
Yeah,
she was passed. That but that was just another bait to get Sokka, though. I mean, you can't trust Azula.
I think they're gonna find Suki with the their Water Tribe and Earth Kingdom.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple
options. That could be
one. Suki hasn't broken
out. Happen in this like elapsed time. Izuki has happened.
Yeah. Okay. One option is that we see. I don't think we're going to see the prisoners. You know, I just don't see us seeing the prisoners side of the story. I don't know.
We don't have to see them. We just need to bust them out.
So Suki could either be with them.
Probably would.
Suki could be with the prisoners. Suki could be. I don't think she's escaped by now. But
or she could brainwashed by the Daily and said.
That's interesting, but yeah, I still gotta say, most likely Suki is dead right now.
No.
Something in my mind.
I think we'll
says
see her again.
I don't know where does she fit into the storyline.
Like, Sokka's development.
I mean, seriously, if they brought her back, it would be in episode 318, and they'd say they'd have one scene. She'd have one scene with Sokka, and what? She'd be kissing him at the end of the series. That doesn't work.
It might be something like Lake Laogai, like Jet returning in Lake Laogai with the gang.
Yeah, I think as. That might
they like to kill her off.
Yeah, Suki could return.
Bring her back, serve her purpose, and then kill her off.
The only storyline that would satisfy me with Suki would be if she's dead already, or if she dies, or if she doesn't get involved with Sokka towards the end. Because unless she comes back at 313 and is with him every single second the rest of the episodes, Sokka better not get with a non-main character that's been in three episodes for the rest of the series.
Yeah, actually, I don't think if Suki is dead, then I don't think he's going to end up with anybody.
If Suki's dead, I know. Sokka, we'll get into this.
Kiss of death.
We'll get into this, but Sokka and Toph, Taka is not going to happen at the end, like, in the literal sense, but, you know, it could be hints there towards the future. But, so, romantically involved with Sokka if she has Toph's. Does Toph care? I don't know.
She's pretty mad about it.
She's 12 years old.
Yeah, in the Serpent's Past, she was kind of annoyed about it.
Well, this doesn't seem like the type of thing that would kill Toph. It's like. Yeah. I think she can dismiss this pretty quickly.
I think she just has a crush on him. It's not
She knows the limit. I mean, this is like a thing to occupy time. She knows what. Yeah, basically. So, I mean, of course it would bother her, but I don't think she cares that much. But if Suki came back, and they were not in a plot development situation in the series, then we might see tension there. So, yeah.
Well, they
a triangle.
We're not doing a lot. Suki shipping. Oh, yeah.
They always use Suki to develop Sokka, right? They used her in the Wars of Kiyoshi to develop him, grow up. And they used her again in the Serpent's Past to develop Sokka some more.
You could argue that's their relationship development, though.
Well, they seem to use romantic stuff to develop Sokka for everything, because they did the same thing with Yue in Siege of the North.
I have this hunch that Sokka's going to meet up with her again, and then he's going to go, I'm not going to lose you like I did with
Yue. Oh, God.
That's so tragic,
that
too.
She has a boyfriend.
She meets Tyro in prison, and then.
Oh God!
I was gonna say Haru, but then I remember he's not in jail. So.
Okay, yeah.
We're not getting anywhere at this. Where does 311 and maybe 310 fall into the best episodes of the series? Let's start with Martin from the lowest point of view there.
I think the first half was average. And the second half was very good. So I'm just going to say, if I need to judge them together, I'm going to say it's somewhere in the middle. It's not one of my favorite episodes.
If you judge them separately? Where does 311 fall?
Probably one of the best episodes, if not the best.
Ah, but still behind Siege of North Part 2, though, right?
Yeah, still behind Siege of North, because the Siege of North just made so much more sense. And the design of the entire North Pole was so much better than the Fire Nation capital. Yeah. It They can't beat the Siege of North. It's going to be interesting to see if they can beat the Siege of North with the Season 3 finale, because...
I think they will.
Siege of North is pretty epic. See, okay.
I don't see how they can beat that.
320, 321...
Okay, Abby, what about you? Where does the invasion fall into your favorite episodes?
I think it was pretty awesome, but it's not one of my favorites. I really like the Puppet Master, and of course, Cave of Two Lovers is way up there.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay, Jake?
I'd say 311 would probably be my favorite episode. 310 would probably... Yeah, of all the series. And 310 would probably fall, like, fourth or fifth.
Okay, Jody?
I think 311 was better than 310.
Jody?
I think it'd be near the top of my favorites, but 311 definitely. I like 311 better than 310, but still I like the headband and the Puppet Master. And Cave of Two Lovers, of course.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Melanie?
It would probably be middle to, I guess, towards the top of my list, because there are a couple episodes that I like better than it, both of them, 310 and 311 separately, and... equally, I guess. So, it would probably be around fifth.
Okay. Ruth?
I liked how 310 led up to 311. I like them... I think they made a good mid-finale, I guess. If mid-finale makes any sense.
Okay.
Fits well.
Well, for me, you know, I originally thought they were amazing, but... after watching a couple times, it doesn't have that same epic feeling as The Siege of the North for me. So, Cave of the Two Lovers still first on my list. Siege of Two North Part 2, Siege of Two North Part 1, then 311, and then 310 falls somewhere within the top 15. So, you know...
Crossroads isn't up there?
Crossroads may be in the top 7. I don't like Crossroads that much.
Crystals.
Crystals, such a bad start. God. Yeah, yes. And then Headband's up there. The Master's up there. So, yeah. Okay, so let's preview 312 again. We already did this once, but let's do it again. It's written by Hedrick and Elizabeth Lehage, and directed
big,
by Mr.
Big,
Spalding.
Big episode.
Big episode. I mean, you have two people writing it, first of all. You have the person who writes the epic episodes, and Hedrick, and you also have Elizabeth, who writes the temple episodes, so... interesting there, and epic, and the epic director, aka Mr. Spalding, is director. So
are we still on that?
Yes,
Mr. Spalding, drop it.
So what will happen in 312? Ursa,
Zuko,
Lotus, any
Zuko.
Yeah,
I seriously think that the Western Air Temple will be a base or something for the White Lotus and the Fire Nation. Because
I can't wait to this Western Air Temple.
And nobody
awesome.
Would look there for a secret base because they think it's deserted.
Okay, basically my opinion on 312, Zuko meets up with them. We have important character development. I mean, something has to happen because Hedrick's directing it, though. So maybe...
Writing it.
So that leads me to it being the White Lotus base and nothing else. Earth, I don't think this is Ursa at all. And I think Iroh comes towards the end, possibly.
Well, on the White Lotus subject, why would an organization like the White Lotus, which is very cryptic, use in headquarters? Organizations like that don't work like that.
Yeah,
they
well,
don't
not
use
a headquarters,
headquarters
like a base.
Yeah, they could use
almost,
well,
like
they could use a secret base, but yeah, this
like
could
how
be
the
like
free, you know,
if
the
no one
finest,
was up there, then this would be the only spot there would if they would have a headquarters, then this would be the spot they would have.
Not like a headquarters, the applying this to like a real life situation. The Freemasons have lodges, which are not headquarters. They're just places where you can meet and stuff. It would be something along those lines. Not a headquarters, but I guess the equivalent to a Freemason lodge. And Dylan, will know what the Freemason is.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay, true.
It's from,
movie.
I love them.
It's possible that they have bases.
I mean, 2107. Yeah, they have bases. I don't know.
But I don't think they will bring
the
back
they
White
had,
Lotus.
Like the one that they had in the desert, they had in the flower shop.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's like little bases.
The White Lotus is coming
back. They probably won't have a huge base. But yeah, the White Lotus is coming back. And
yes, Martin.
It's obviously coming back because Iroh has to find his way back, but I don't know if it'll be that big. But
the Lotus Tile and Sokka's Master?
Yeah, that's definitely repeating itself. But seriously.
Yeah, but they wouldn't bring it back this soon. They wouldn't bring this back already because... Iroh just busted out of jail. I think they'll keep the White Lotus thing a mystery for some time. They'll just probably bring it back in a few episodes.
I don't think they have time to keep it a mystery for some time.
Why not?
They don't have time.
Because it's back 9 episodes. They won't have time to keep it a mystery. They have to scrunch this stuff in.
I'm almost positive by now that Iroh is going to the ambiguous ending of 312. Iroh is going to come. The gang's not going to greet him yet, but they're just going to show him like walking up to the door or something. Because they don't, they literally, they have to get Iroh into the storyline immediately. Just, that's why Zuko was such an abrupt addition. Because they decided to have the movie 310, 311 instead of 39, 310, or 38, 39. So, it has to happen now because they have a lot to do.
But I don't think they will add Iroh to the gang, because what would Iroh's part be in the gang?
Firebending
master.
No, I think they'll use Zuko as a firebending
master. Zuko's not a master.
Zuko's not a master.
Who cares?
The thing is, Zuko is not a master because he's emotionally, I don't want to say unstable, that makes him sound like crazy, but that's a big part of firebending, is controlling your emotions. That's something that Zuko doesn't have.
He can develop that by teaching Aang. He can develop that while teaching Aang.
Yeah.
And besides, what else would Zuko's role be besides teaching Aang?
Zuko's role is going to be teaching Aang. And Iroh's role could be teaching Aang. Zhang Yang's role could be teaching Aang. There are many possible teachers. The fact is that Aang needs to be in a position to learn firebending. And that means he needs Zuko and Iroh there. Which one teaches him or not, it's going to be interesting. But Iroh is going to find the gang. Why else would he have broken out?
I mean, if Zuko and Iroh are together, they'll just interact with each other, and the interaction with the rest of the gang will diminish. It won't be as much.
I don't agree with that. I think Iroh is going to let Zuko do his thing, and Iroh's going to have more of his group, and Zuko's going to have his group and stuff. It's like, I think they might do Avatar clicks, actually, but it's like, it's...
Oh, well, Iroh could hang with Haru and the Duke and those guys, and Zuko is with the gang.
Yeah,
well, that would make sense for Zuko's character. If Iroh would be around, Zuko would hang around Iroh. That's just...
I think Zuko's done with Iroh. I think Zuko has matured from Iroh. I really do. He's done with Iroh. I mean, he's not necessarily, like, abandoning him, because he actually went to bust him out, but he's not dependent on him anymore. The point is that he has matured enough to make his own decision. He doesn't need Iroh giving him advice every time that every, like...
Then show that through being independent. Then don't throw Iroh in there. Then make him act independent. Don't make Iroh.
Well, if you don't throw Iroh in there, how do you accomplish? How do you resolve the 304 storyline? How do you resolve the fact that Aang doesn't have a good teacher? And how do you resolve that? Just like
he's broken out of jail.
Yeah, exactly. That he broke out. Like, when do you bring him back?
And where is he now? Exactly.
They can bring him back near the finale.
They
and make
don't
it do
have a lot of
like...
time to bring him back. He has 9
episodes.
Part of the first
9 episodes is a lot. But here's the problem with bringing Iroh back towards the finale. Iroh brings with him a ton. I mean, he brings with the White Lotus storyline. He brings with him motivation. Okay. Let's think back to. Here's the main point. Iroh giving Aang advice in Crossroads of Destiny when they're digging down the tunnel. Iroh provides an aspect to Aang that is hugely important in the last 9 episodes, I'm almost positive. I mean, I think Iroh's gonna be there more for Aang than Zuko.
To be honest, why would you still have Zuko around if you have Iroh in the group? He's a better firebending teacher, he's a better person, he's more complete, he has a better morale,
I don't know what Zuko brings to Zuko it. I don't know, but that's interesting.
If Zuko cannot teach firebending, he will be as dead as tough.
They both could teach him.
Now, that would suck. I would hate that.
I think Zuko will resolve his relationship with Aang.
The point is that Iroh has something valuable to bring to Aang, and so does Zuko, and they both are going to be big influences on him, as well as him and his decision, which is going to decide the fate of him and the world that he has to make towards the end of these 6 episodes. So
I think what it is Iroh will be there for Aang for the firebending, and Zuko will be there for the emotional aspect, like their relationship as far as friendship and getting over the whole he tried to kill me thing.
That doesn't make sense.
I don't know.
If they're both there.
If this wasn't 122, I would be, like, better at this, but... Zuko provides... I'd hate saying emotional for this, because it's not like an emotional aspect they have, but it's more of like a relationship aspect. It shows that...
They can work together? Partnership?
They can show that through firebending. It would be perfect.
I don't
they
like
can build a relationship
Zuko,
through firebending.
I don't like referencing Zuko and Aang's relationship. I think it is non-existent.
Then why would they
you
have
think
three
the relationship
or six?
Is nine non-res- non okay, I can't speak. How do you think it's non-
Because I'm ignoring the Bruce Bear right now. I just don't think it was good, but
I think it's
you know, I'm struggling with coming up a reason why Zuko's going to be there. I really am right now.
Because of their relationship, Dylan.
But that's,
the one
that's
that you
not
refuse
helping,
to acknowledge
but that's
exists.
That's not helping Aang. I mean, Aang, I'm looking at it from what I know. Jake, help me out here. Why is Zuko there for them? Can you, I mean, like, knowing what we know, can you think of a point?
I don't really think so. I mean,
Jake,
other than
Jake and
the whole destiny factor,
yeah.
I mean...
That's interesting.
How, like...
Well, yeah, but what's
relationships
the point of their destiny
transcend
defining?
Lifetimes and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But destiny is on the background. What's going on the foreground? But
yeah, well,
Zuko
I mean,
can't just walk up to the gang and say, "Hey, Aang, want to be friends? Destiny says so." He needs to do something with him. They need to build his relationship.
Martin, the fact is you're correct here, and Jake and I come from the same amount of information here. Right now, Iroh is going to join them pretty soon. Okay? But it's... I don't see how... You're right. It's going to be interesting to see what Zuko adds. I really can't come up with a reason right now.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I never thought about that. Okay.
Zutara.
No.
He's going to add Zutara.
It's like anti-
That's exactly it. Exactly.
It's for Zutara. High five.
That's the anti-reason. High five.
That's the entire reason for it.
So, yeah, the episode's important. It's very important. This, I mean... Something's gonna happen. There's gotta be a twist to this somewhere. It could be the White Lotus base, but there's gonna be a huge something happening that we don't expect.
Yeah.
Not more airbenders, by the way.
There's more airbenders, guys.
That
I think
whole
we have
summary that's out there...
Climate bending.
Shut up about it. It's not...
Climate bending.
Stop listening to TV.com. I'm annoyed.
Yeah.
Once again, Avatar the last
We'll go over
Airbender.
That some more in the mailbag. Okay, let's now,
that, like,
since we just had a hugely long discussion where we didn't go anywhere, let's move on to our hugely long mailbag. The mailbag segment is where we'll answer questions you guys send in and on Avatar and address comments on the podcast. You can send questions to us at podcast@dongwufang.net. This week's will be longer since we haven't had one in 3 weeks, so we have like 15 letters here, and I even didn't add most of the letters I think we got. So yeah, we're going to like run over these as quickly as I can, hopefully. Okay, so let's start.
Okay. So, Rose writes, "Hello, everyone. I think that your podcast is awesome. It really makes me think harder about every episode. I was just wondering how you would ever try a video podcast. This is totally just a thought, and I would like to try it. And
it's totally just a
totally
thought
just
if you
thought.
Want to try this. Keep up the great work.
Dylan, it's her birthday.
I know.
Yeah, come on.
Not on the East Coast anymore, but, video podcast, I think I've said this before, I mean, I would be willing to do it, but it's not gonna happen, because my idea of a video podcast would be us switching feeds and stuff. It's like, whoever's talking, they show that, and then it cuts, and then we could show a clip in something, but it's not worth it if we can't do that, and as Kevin has explained to me, you need heavy video equipment to do that type of switching and stuff like that. So, like, for everyone involved, too. So that's not happening. I mean, if we figured out a way to make it easier, then we could, but I mean, what do you guys want to see our faces for anyway? It's not that exciting.
People want Dylan's face. People want Dylan's face.
And Jake's little beard and... and Joe's bandana.
Joe's bandana, exactly. Okay, next
for Abby's
me. Abby's chair. She could show Abby falling out of the chair. Okay, next scene.
So mean. So mean.
Oh, God.
And choking on cookies.
Crazy Zuko fangirl writes, first of all, I love your podcast. We need to go. People think I'm crazy because I put it on my iPod, and when I listen to the podcast in public, I laugh a lot. Second, I want to know if you think it's fair that older kids in, like, 8th or 9th grade get made fun of for liking Avatar. People always call me Grassbender or something of a similar nature, and it's very annoying. Has this happened to you?
Well, first of all, Grassbender is like the worst insult ever. And seriously, if they can't come up with something that's better than Grassbender, then you don't even need to like listen to
exactly.
You
should be proud of that nickname. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's a big nickname. So that's it's like climate
people
bending.
People make fun of me all the time.
I never get made fun of.
They call me Music Bender.
Well, first of all, older kids, we're all in ninth grade. We're all in high school or above here, so... Yeah, it's older kids. I don't necessarily advertise my
friends
fandom.
Friends don't know about it.
Yeah, I don't.
I mean,
I'm more open this year than like normal, but I don't advertise.
See, great friends.
Well, I actually convert people to the Avatar fandom, so I have people to talk it about. Converted a lot of people to Avatarism. At least 5 people. I've watched the entire series with at least 5 people. So, you could always try to
just randomly, I find out my friends or people at my school actually
watch
the show. I don't know Dylan. No, I don't. I swear to God. Like, today, listen to this. Today in PE, we were like waiting for the bell to ring, and there's like this is a weird story, but there's like this hole in a brick wall. It looked like a nail or a screw had been there once, and someone says something like, oh, it must like belong to the ant people and stuff. And then someone comes by and says, or one of my friends comes by and says, oh, we should like invade it on the day of Black Sun. I just looked at
it. Oh my God.
It's like, oh my God. Wow.
Someone actually came up to me on a day of Black Sun. It was just like, hey, Abby, guess what? It's day of Black Sun. I'm like, oh my God, how'd you know? I was totally just going to say that to you.
So that's how it happens.
They make fun of me, actually.
Yeah.
People call me
I've gotten my best friend since like preschool to catch up on the series, so I don't know. I'm good. At least with 2 people.
No, my best friend from like.
Okay, next email. No, enough stories. Next email.
Oh man.
Hey Alex.
K.A. Lover.
K.A.
Lover, right? Hey people, this is one of your listeners in Alaska. I wanted to
Alaska?
Yeah, still in
Alaska exists?
Yeah, I know. It's amazing that actually people live in Alaska. Okay. Go.
I wanted to say that your podcast is nothing short of wonderful, and probably amazing, too. I love all of your segments. Keep sneaking that Katang in there, Dylan. Your podcast is what keeps me alive on my dual hour-and-a-half bus rides. It is great to get so many different views in there, as well as comedy and scripted impromptus. I think your hidden Zutara segment is giving Zutarians ideas.
I was afraid of that, too.
Anyway, I know there's going to be tons more emails, so I'll get to my question. What do you think are the chances of Katara and Aang going out, for lack of a better word, you know what I mean, before the end of the season? Before the end of the season. Is there going to be a few episodes with fluff in them? I know it's a stupid question, but I have to ask it. I personally hope there will be, and I think that there actually is a small chance of it, too. Anyway, yeah, keep up the great work. I think it's one of the best podcasts so far. You are all great. Oh, and one last question. I know this is such a profound and non-biased thought, but what do you think would happen if Aang just walked up to Katara right now and kissed her? Thanks for reading this, by the way. Bye.
Okay, a couple of points to clarify here. First
don't
of all,
encourage Dylan.
First
don't
of all,
encourage
Alaska
Dylan.
Does exist. And second of all, this podcast, this email was sent in before Day of Black Sun, so yeah. Aang did pretty much just walk up there and
kiss
her.
Well, see, this is what I think would happen. They'd be on a boat and...
in the water. And, so, this is my second favorite email this couple of weeks. My first favorite one, we're not saying on here.
Complimented
so
you.
No, because of the catting questions.
Compliments.
What was I going to say? First of all, the thing that got me here was your podcast, What Keeps Me Alive, and dual hour and a half bus rides. First, that really sucks. 2 hour and a half bus rides, like, a day, so... That's one of my motivations for... We're recording extra podcasts so we can go over the holiday, but... Seriously, that's great. Keep sending stuff like that in. That really motivates me to do this better. It's like keeping you from boredom. So, yeah, Hidden Zutara segment, giving Zutarians ideas. I hope not, because that would be really low. So.
No, I was actually thought about that, because apparently they're actually using some of those, or used it before I said them.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Genius.
Okay, so what are the chances of Katara 9 going out? Well, first of all,
zero.
No,
shut up! Okay, I'm going to answer this truthfully. Going out, let's replace that with in a romantic relationship. Yes, that will happen next couple episodes. There's going to be fluff in the next couple episodes as well, because that's the vital. It's vital to the storyline for there to be fluff. Has to be fluff. Dating. Date's a stupid word, okay? It doesn't... Seriously.
Well, you want to date, like, Zuko and Jin and,
That was a date. You know what they mean. So basically, yeah, there's going to be fluff, and they're going to be in a romantic relationship. And... Yeah, but
I think there's actually room for a date, because there's going to be at least one or two comic relief episodes, and why not go on a date on a comic relief episode?
Disagree.
It's perfectly plausible.
I
don't think there'd be comic relief episodes, but 313, written by John O'Brien, has a good chance for Cat Ang.
Oh,
funny Cat Ang in there.
No.
John O'Brien! He's writing 313, and that's perfect point in the Cat Ang storyline. They're going to be beyond their reactions to the kiss, and they're just it's perfect time for a comedic Cat Ang date, I think. That episode has a lot of potential. And
they'll go out to tea together.
Oh, yeah. And then... we addressed that. Okay, so... great email. Stuff like that. Okay. Next.
Justin writes, "Hi, I was just wondering what kind of bending would you do if you could be a bender? This question was probably already asked, but that's okay. I love the podcast and the new music. Joe is awesome!"
Okay, first Joe. A lot of Joe love lately. Well, okay, let's just go down the list here. Have we had this question before? Doesn't matter, because we've been
firebending.
This actually surprises
me. Abby, to start.
Okay, well, first, I really wanted to be an earthbender, because I just thought it was awesome. During second season, I really wanted to be a firebender. And then... Now it's waterbending, because bloodbending is awesome.
So you want to be the Avatar, and then?
Forget airbending. Pretty much. Okay? I don't like airbending.
Okay, so Abby's just crazy. Okay, Jake?
Firebending, no doubt about it.
Why?
Because firebending kicks...
Okay, that's random.
Spot. Sensor.
Fire is awesome.
Oh, yeah, edit. Okay, Jody?
Blade.
I'd be a waterbender, and I'd probably be a healer, because I suck at fighting.
Good
reason.
You didn't want to try it.
Okay, Martin.
I'd be an airbending, because flying is awesome. I would love to be able.
Superman!
Exactly.
Melanie?
Firebending, just because I like the fact that you don't need the native element to be around you. Like, you don't need to be near water.
Yeah,
you produce fire yourself.
Well,
your body keeps...
I can counter that, whatever. Ruth?
What?
I'd like to be an earthbender because I like to get down and dirty.
You just want to be near Boomy, don't
like,
you?
I'm not even going to say it. You know what I want to say? I'm not even going to say it.
And stability of earthbending.
Let's put this way, Facebook nomination.
Oh, yeah, and I would obviously be a waterbender ever since season one. I love the defensiveness of the element, and it's not...
Tai Chi.
It's not an aggressive...
You like Tai Chi.
Yeah, it's not an aggressive method. It's more of a defensive, and can use it for better purposes. But as we've seen, there's the opposite to that, and the Puppet Master, you can use it for bad purposes as well, so... Very interesting element. And water's awesome. No, I wouldn't want to be a bloodbender, that's the point.
Ew. That would be gross.
Okay, so next.
Samantha writes, I really like the last two scripted impromptus you did. The first one with the deserted town was a little boring. I was left with warm fuzzies by the end of it. Then this last one was great. I think all the characters were pulled off really well, especially Ty Lee. At the end of it, I found myself really wanting to know what happens next. This may not be possible, but what... Well, I lost my spot. But what I would really like to see is a continuing story with a new chapter every week, picking up with where the other left off. Would this be possible?
Well, that's the plan. that's why it was created, so we'd have something to do once the show ended, actually. So yeah, we were just testing the waters with those two. So yeah,
testing.
Right after the season finale, if we continue with throughout the summer, we're gonna have a continuing scripted impromptu storyline. That's it. Okay, next.
Tat Jenna writes, Hi, my name is Tat Jenna, and I live in Belgium. I really like your podcasts. They're funny, and I think your comments about the episodes are really professional. My question is, what do you think about episode 310 and 311 airing first in Netherlands and Belgium? I was kind of surprised, because our Nickelodeon often sucks. Thanks, and keep
going. Go Holland!
Okay, basically, I don't even understand this, because it was dubbed. It wasn't even the English version. It was... dubbed. Why the heck do that?
Yeah, that was definitely new.
First, the dub version. You want to complain about the dub version, Martin, or not right now?
So, hey, Tatjana, Nederland en België ruleert. Ga zo lekker door.
Sure.
Heerlijk.
Okay.
We verdienen het. Luister niet naar hun.
Did he just like curse 20 times?
We would never know.
You'll never know.
Wait,
what
spell
I just
it
said.
Out for me. I can send it through the translator.
Yeah, it was a stupid noob by Nick. I didn't even understand this. Why did Nick even do that? Why'd they do the dub version? It didn't make any sense. I mean,
yeah, I don't get
this
it.
Was just Nick being stupid, and I think it was just miscommunication again. I don't know. I can't think of anything else other than being seriously, like, literally stupid. So.
And awesome. I'm still laughing about it. I still can't believe it, man.
Okay, next.
George writes, at the end of the invasion, when they were saying their goodbyes, why didn't Toph and Katara go? Toph because of the metal bending, and Katara because of the blood bending. Also, on a different note, what do you think of Suki and Ursa? Where do you think Suki and Ursa are? P.S. You all rule.
Okay, we already hit on Suki and Ursa, but that's an interesting question. That Toph or Katara could have stayed behind and helped the prisoners escape.
It probably because of them being so young.
Well, yeah,
that's the reason they had them leave.
Toph and Katara definitely is more vital to the Aang side of the storyline. It's that she couldn't have left Toph. You could argue that Toph would be better at the prison than there, because she's dead anyway, so why not
she
help people
break
escape?
Them out.
Yeah.
And well, Azula is not stupid. If she sees Toph wandering around, she knows she can metal bend, so why not just zap her?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So basically, they didn't really serve any purpose, I guess, in jail. They wouldn't... I don't know. They're better for the Aang side. And yeah, thanks. Okay. Next.
Suki and Ursa, or...
Do we hit on that before?
Okay. Me?
Yes.
Tom writes, just heard your latest podcast. One of the things you just threw away was that there might be airbenders at the Western Air Temple. I have a couple reasons why this is possible. I think the Fire Nation found the Western Air Temple because is you look at the map
if
during
you look at
the intro, there's only three Air Temple places, and on the episode Avatar and the Fire Lord, in Fire Lord Sozin's Last Testament, when he said he destroyed the Air Temples, there's only three temples on fire, which means only airbenders know where it is. So, this is most likely to be airbenders there. Love the podcast, P.S. Katang does not rule.
I think I'm gonna shoot myself
all,
if I hear this time.
I specifically refuted on the 306 discussion podcast that the fourth one was panning onto the screen during that, even before any arguments came up. I saw this one coming. So yeah, seriously, the four air temple, it was panning on. You
Wait.
Had to look for it. There was three,
Jake,
and then a fourth
rules.
Was coming on. And yes, Tom said Katang rules, not Katang does not rule.
So. I just realized that now.
The fourth air temple is up in the Earth Kingdom. The Northern Air Temple is up in the Earth Kingdom Mountains.
Yeah, exactly. There are four temples.
If I hear one more thing about...
Yeah, Aang is the last airbender. There are no airbenders. There may be... There's like a,
well, Appa is an airbender.
Oh my goodness, don't.
The last airbender, airbender first to person, usually. So.
There could be bison, though. Flying bison.
Okay, here's there's a 0.02% chance that there are air nomad... How do you say this?
Descendants.
But that can't bend air. But that's not going to happen either. But I guess that's still kind of a possibility, but not really. Because there's airbenders. Stupid Megan Bryan said they're 100% air nomads, and that completely defeats my genetic theory, so I don't like them for that.
But still, I don't see the reason to bring in airbenders again.
That would make no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
It doesn't add anything, basically. And it's not going to happen. That's all you need to know. It's not going to happen. Okay. Yeah. Branko writes, everyone sacrificed so much for what seemed for so little. Regret abounds all at the end of the season. So what was it all for? Knowing ahead of time the imminent failure of the invasion's escapades. Yeah, I can't read. Begs me to question what meaning existed behind Aang and his friends running off again. Not to say that the episode turned out bad, far from it. Again, we recognize how blurred and uncertain future of the key player looks, along with the real development amongst some of the most pressing characters like Katara and Aang. What direction will the writers take that relationship? Regardless, a small but pivotal victory occurred when Zuko confronted his father. I felt a moment of pure joy to see our expectations reversed when Zuko confronted the Fire Lord instead of Aang. A personal victory for character tied to a menacing keeper for over 3 years and 40 episodes. Zuko may not confront Aang and his friends the next episode, though it seems ludicrous to think Blake and Ryan would want to avoid a crucial opportunity for attention and character conflict and character development. It defines common sense for the group to trust Zuko so late in the game without Sophie in episodes or interaction. Who made it take long to trust him, and why? Also, Zuko's final goal is not to join the Avatar, but to help him defeat his father. I agree Zuko's does not fit well with the rest of the group, despite the potential conflict he invokes. His journey seems more existential compared to Aang's. Still, what Aang plans on doing next remains unclear, and Zuko might motivate him towards taking the next step. Got to start at the beginning. Yes, regret did feel day. The point was we knew it was gonna fail, but they didn't. The whole point of it was to be a fake finale. That was what the episode was. And I mean, what was the point of Aang? What was the point of them running off? Because they're already so badly damaged that they had no chance. What if they stayed there and fought still? Basically, they can invade during a better situation. Like a full moon or something, possibly. That's true, Dramirony.
Dramatic irony.
It's called Dramirony.
I call it dramatic irony.
Yeah, I think we've discussed what direction they will take Aang Katara. Yeah, I think that was awesome to see Zuko instead of Aang confronting Ozai. That was really good part of it. Yeah, and Zuko finally beat himself, actually. It was more of him. It wasn't him versus Ozai. It was him versus him. And yeah, Mike and Brian aren't going to avoid it. I mean, last podcast, I was just trying to say something different, but they're pretty much going to address it in 312. And who might take the longest to trust Zuko? I mean, the obvious answer is Katara. The obvious answer is Katara.
I'm going to say Katara.
Aang may be hesitant to trust him more. You never know. That would be good plot development.
I don't know.
Actually,
I don't think Aang will trust him.
Yeah,
that would actually.
I think Aang will trust him. Aang will be the most trusting.
You would think Aang would be the most trusting based on their past.
No, I think Toph will be the most trusting because of her ability to see when someone's lying.
Because you're like the little sister I never had.
But she also has the ability. She also has the ability to see that he is a jerk. So why? Why would she like him just because he's telling the truth?
If Iroh is there and he said
Iroh's
trusting Zuko,
I'm almost positive Iroh comes after Zuko. Okay, so you know, I don't know. I think the answer is Katara, but it would be interesting if the answer was Aang because that would add something to the story. So, is Zuko's final goal to defeat his father, or is it to join the Avatar?
He said in the episode that it wasn't his job to take down his dad, it was the Avatar's.
To help him defeat his father.
And he was going to help him, he's not going to do it himself.
No, Zuko's goal is to restore balance to the world. He's the same exact goal as Aang.
So he's the Avatar.
He's like the Avatar, yeah.
He's the Avatar to Scott.
Because
and that means defeating his father, because that's the only way.
That's part of it. I don't think it was... It's not all of it. And I think Zuko joining Aang is as much part of his goal as it is defeating... Ozai.
Like, no, it's a step towards his goal. It's not actually part of his goal.
Well, Ozai isn't his goal, though. I mean, his goal is to undo all the bad things he's done and his help doing his nation's
redeem
help
himself
do.
And redeeming himself by bringing balance back to the world, I guess.
Yeah. It's an era of peace and kindness.
Whether Ozai's dead or not doesn't matter. It's who cares, really? Okay, so. Yeah, next.
Jesse writes, "Hey guys, the Day of Black Sun special was great, though I have a couple of things to say. Why are you so hesitant to believe that Zuko will join the gang, Dylan? I do support the theory that he's going to find his mom, but why not with Aang? I don't believe he needs to go on another journey to do it, since he is obviously on Aang's side now. Also, his blimp isn't going to run out of fuel before he meets up with the gang, because I think... they would notice a bright red war balloon with a Fire Nation insignia following them."
Yes, I've already explained why I was hesitant in the last podcast, because it's taking opposite point of view.
You flip-flopped.
No, I'm flip-flopping for a reason.
He contradicted.
I'm contradicting. Yeah. It's a scripted impromptu.
John Kerry.
Oh my god, I hate that.
It's a scripted, okay.
Shut up.
Oh my god.
You know, I don't know. Why not with Aang to find his mom? Because Aang has more important things to do than look for Zuko's mom. That's interesting. Is that... Yay. Is the war balloon going to run out of... I mean, are they going to catch... I'm distracted now. Is they going to catch... Stupid Cuban distracting.
Getting like me.
Is the... Are they going to notice him before they reach their air temple? I mean, the obvious answer is yes, because they'll probably see Zuko following him. So that's interesting. But the answer better to the storyline is that we see them arriving at the Western Air Temple, because it's kind of boring to start an episode in the air. I mean,
they did, like, 10 times in season one.
Well, yeah, that was on us. This was, like, running away from something, I guess. Well, you're right. Okay. They're going to start in the air. Okay.
It could easily be either.
I admit defeat. Okay. Ricola writes an essay on Cat Aang, and I'll respond to selected points. So I'm going to do paragraph by paragraph here. So this is more of ranting, her ranting on me being too canon, which is solid brilliance. So yeah, send this stuff in. I love this stuff. Okay, so yeah, she also says good stuff too, but I'm just doing the controversial stuff. Okay, so how does Aang I and Katara I said at the same time translate to, oh, I love you? I mean, seriously, Aang probably did want to say he loved her, but Katara just wanted to start her we've been through so much together sentence.
No.
It was implied. I mean, this wasn't the confession scene. I don't know. It was a little more simple than that. It was just I care about you more than I love you.
Well, she could have been trying to say something else when she said Aang I. Like, what she wanted to have said might have been change. Oh, wait, no. Never mind. She talked first, didn't she?
Yeah, she did.
Never mind.
Well, judging from other Hollywood productions, saying Aang I or always indicates I love you. I have no reason to think they would say something else.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, this was... they were implying this, but I mean, I'm not going to go ahead and say this is the time when they admit their feelings for each other, because it's not, and there's obviously some controversy here. So, well, this will make more sense as we go into it. Okay, so how is Katara flirty? I see nothing except a fantastically animated scene with much body language as they get away with. I'm probably overthinking now, but right at that moment, Katara's focusing on the present, on the upcoming battle they all think will be there. Be the last. I don't think she really has been thinking about what will be after that. Aang talks about everything being different. She subconsciously wipes the thought away and resettles her hair. I don't know, I just can't accept that. That's a decent explanation. No, because she had that little grin on her face when she was doing it. It wasn't a grin, it was like a look, you could see. It was flirty. I mean, Katara was kind of being flirty there, and it wasn't necessary to get Aang to kiss her, it was just trying to express the emotion.
I think this is actually a pretty good example of overanalyzing things. Because her body language pretty much said flirting to me. I don't know.
She was kind of playing with her hair and stuff, wasn't she?
Yeah, that's flirting.
Subconsciously wiping away the thought of the future.
Blushing and everything.
Just overanalyzing. Yeah, There's no reason to think why she would think that.
Well, we'll get into this more in the next couple of paragraphs. But yeah, okay, here's the paragraph of the lifetime. This was most likely Katara's first kiss. I have a question for you. If you're heading into a battle where you might very likely die, and your best friend comes up and kisses you without warning, would you really pull away? I know I wouldn't. I'd leave repercussions for later, supposing I survive, and enjoy the first kiss, possibly the last kiss. Even if the guy kissing me is a lot smarter than me, 3 years younger, or 37 years older.
97.
That's bad. Yeah. And probably hasn't even hit puberty yet. The air kiss is cute, and her surprise is obvious, even though I think she's surprised because she's oblivious to his feelings, not because he finally had the guts to do it. Okay, I disagree with here. Well, obviously, yeah, if your best friend comes up and kisses you before you're about to die, I mean, you're not going to pull away. I mean, that's a given. I mean, even if Katara didn't love Aang, then she wouldn't pull away. But there are things that so she did. And Aang has hit puberty, by the way. And if we wanted to analyze those pictures a little from the kiss scene, then we would see that.
Oh my god, shut up. No.
Jake knows what I'm talking about. But
no way. Oh my
you were
god.
The one who pointed that out to me. And Jake, yeah, Aang's in puberty. He has been since like a month after
I did? Day. I don't remember that.
Yeah, oh my god, no comment.
He definitely did. And she's not surprised. No, she. Katara. What was 114 for? If she's not surprised that Aang likes her anyway. I want 218. I could point out all these instances. 202, obviously. Katara knows Aang likes her. It's not that she was oblivious or anything. It's she was surprised because he kissed her before the final battle. That was why. It wasn't. No. Not even go in the depth of that. What did you just say, Zutara?
Yeah.
No. Okay. Then comes.
I had to get to.
Then comes the sad look. My opinion is she's sad because she realizes she cannot return the feelings. Sadness because she realizes he might not come back as an ice alternative. But if
again,
I can only say that Katara has a lot of faith in Aang's skills and his destiny to overcome the Fire Lord. And seeing how she was surprised as she was before, I don't think her mind would do the jump from the kiss to death that quickly. Okay.
Oh my god, I think I'm gonna throw my computer through a window right now.
Yeah, no. She's sad because she may lose her best friend and future lover.
Thank you. My goodness.
When you put it like that.
Again, this is overanalyzing right here. Lover. Why would you go through. Why would you think the complicated explanation when there's an easier explanation? Right.
Exactly. They weren't thinking of a complicated, she can't return the feelings, Zutara thing when they animated it.
No, basically, wait, why wouldn't her mind jump from kiss to death quickly? I mean, this is the situation. The kiss is a break from the death. It's like, and then Katara's mind slowly distracts to reality, and it's like, this guy I love, he might not be here anymore. That's, like, the whole point of the sad look. And she realizes that when he starts to fly off into the distance. It wasn't at all that she can't return the feelings. I mean, you have to think of the situation that they're in. It's not even possible for her to even have those thoughts. Like, can't return the feelings. Okay.
This was on the Selmay forums, that whole sad look for Zutara thing.
Okay, also, throughout the rest of the episode, whenever Aang, Katara, and interactions there's no hint of Kat, Aang, Katara in love. In the end, where Katara gives his charming little speech and to the men they're going to leave behind. And Katara puts her arm around Shiga. I can see no difference, Katara, before the kiss. She's comforting her best friend. She knows how he feels and puts on that big smile. I think it looks like a force to make him feel better. Okay. Everything you said from no hint of Katara love down was correct. And that's interesting because that was anti-cutting. Katara in love, she was chasing after him. I mean, how is that not good? I mean, on Appa, is Aang went off, and then she's like, I'm not letting him go and do this on his own. So he's like, Appa, we can help too. That whole scene, that was a Katara-Aang scene there, even though it wasn't direct. You're right.
And if she's comforting him, why would she even bring up romance at that time?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't see the reason.
Basically, as I've said before, the kiss wasn't a turning point. I mean, it was a turning point, it wasn't the turning point.
Right.
Obviously, I mean, if it was the turning point, I mean, they'd, like, be in each other's arms, but...
Dylan's a flip-flopper.
This isn't flip-flopping, because he's gonna... Yeah, she is comforting her best friend, but her best friend is also turning into her boyfriend. That's the whole point of this, and it's turning into, it's not there yet. And, yeah, she knows how he feels, and does she's gonna force the smile, because she doesn't really feel positive. I mean, she's feeling the same thing he's feeling, and duh, he wants him to make him feel better, because obviously that's, like, what it... Duh, yeah, that last sentence was correct. So, yeah, don't overanalyze this. Think it was a kiss scene. Then you have to think of it from a kiss scene point of view. Seriously. Okay, any random comments? And the mailbag.
See, Tara's gonna happen?
Oh, God, three people say
it. Thank you.
High five.
Said it all.
No. High five.
Martin said it all.
What do you mean said it all? Okay, let's move on to our ending. Okay, that's all for this week's podcast. Send us questions at podcast.dongfeng.net. Send us questions about Avatar for the mailbag segment. And yeah, I've been your main host for today. Co-hosts have been Abby, Jake, Jody, Martin, Melanie, and Ruth. And stop changing the topic line. I can see it now. Technical directors AJ Kevin, musical remixes by Lou Trick. I edit. Dongfeng's owned by Jake.
Basically, way to go.
Next week we're going to be recording right after the 313 title is revealed, which one of those four choices, and we'll be discussing that mainly. And that's pretty much it. It'll be a shorter podcast. So what will happen in that John O'Brien written 313 episode?
Good dang date.
I can actually see it happening. So we'll see next week.
I don't see it happening.
Okay, yeah. So until next week's... and by the way, guys, we're not taking a three-week bake. I don't know if I mentioned here, but we are
bake?
Going... three-week makeout, not good. So we're doing... We're going every week. We're going every week through the holidays, actually. Because we're doubling up recording these next 2 weeks. So, yeah, I got motivated. So, good. Good job, guys, for motivating me. 3,500 listeners. That motivates me a lot. So, yeah.
You touched Dylan's heart.
You did. Thank you very much.
I don't know.
Okay, and... Okay, so see... Unison... Which one? Unison by Unison Sweet.
Sweet.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
One, two, three. Sweet.
Sweet.